Today, our economic update for July. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one that's post covering finance and property news. Well, I'm going to take you through some of my slides, which I prepared for my economic snapshot this month. And because the data is moving very quickly and I won't now be able to record with Nugget until next week, I thought I would take you through the headlines myself. First point to say is that the inflation, of course, in Australia is a lot hotter than expected. And frankly, the talk now is very much about lifting rates rather than cutting rates. And this is in contrast to a number of other economies where now talk is of rate cuts. Looking at the most recent data, you can see there that the annual inflation for services is rising significantly and goods is going sideways, but rents and the cost of building a new home are still elevated. So therefore, the costs are flowing in to speculation that inflation may well require rate hikes. Now, whether that's true or not, we'll see. There are still some people talking rates down as the next step, but many talking them up. And I think it's worth highlighting that sometimes some of the commentators with interest, like Commonwealth Bank, for example, tend to be on the downward track with regard to rates, whereas others perhaps are more elevated. So sometimes it's interesting to note people's motivations. Anyway, the consequence of this is that the two-year rate has been quite elevated at 4.245%. And the expectation based on the 30-day interbank cash rate futures is for a rate hike, and in fact rates coming down through 2025. As a result of all this, though, with higher rates for longer, we are seeing some significant consequences. And of course, we can see that both in terms of the depressed retail spending, and if you adjust for inflation, then of course, people just not spending as much. And that's true for both the critical non-discretionary, but very importantly, even discretionary spending is down when you take account of the fact that, of course, we've got more people here thanks to high migration. So this is a very weak retail environment. The latest data on lending shows that, in fact, there is significant powering up going on at the moment, but most of it's driven by investors who have the greater share of lending investment. And of course, property prices are still relatively elevated. The latest home value index from CoreLogic shows that it's ridiculously expensive, 1.17 million, for example, the average median price in Sydney. And just translating that to how much do you need to earn to buy a house at the average price in the capital cities, you can see here, courtesy of the ABC, that in Sydney, $238,000 plus now required, and even in Perth, $154,000. Remembering that the average income across Australia is a lot lower than that. And the ratio is a stretch, whether you look at dwelling price to GDP per capita, for example, significantly above the averages. Or indeed, thanks to Tarek Brooker, this chart that shows you the significant movement from 1998 in terms of real housing prices, but not so much real wages. So people are under severe pressure. Not surprising, therefore, that the stress data that we report regularly shows that both rental stress and mortgage stress is significantly higher than previously. And of course, this trend is continuing. It's translating now into more distressed sales and more talk about households in difficulty. Maybe no surprise. I made a show the other day about that, actually, which showed that we really now are in trouble in the land of Oz. And this begs the question, of course, what will the RBA do next? Well, their latest statement said that households with mortgages are significantly affected by these higher rates. Consumption growth is weak, but there is still a need to press down on inflation, which will ultimately benefit all Australian households and businesses. Well, I guess it depends what you mean by benefit. Certainly at the moment, we've got one third of households in significant pressure, significant difficulty. Others, of course, without mortgages, are doing quite well, but the rental sector is where the real pain is, and at the moment I don't see any of that changing anytime soon. Let's now go over to the UK, because of course we had the votes there in the most recent election, And weirdly, thanks to First Past the Post, there were 1/3 of votes going to Labour, but they got 2/3 of seats. Now they're in charge. But it is worth noting that if you compare it with recent results, their share of the vote fell. So you have to say, what mandate was this? Well, it was more a vote against the Conservative Party than it was for Labour policy. Though interestingly, Labour's now come in and announced a target of 1.7 million homes to be built, changes to the planning regulations to try and get more agreed more quickly, and some other strategies too. Sounds pretty familiar, but of course they're going to come up with the same issues in Australia, where capacity to build is already constrained, and the ability to build 1.7 million homes in the UK or 1.2 million in Australia is probably a bit of a pipe dream. We will see. Anyway, the markets were relatively positive with this result, and because of the fact that inflation is easing in the UK, rates for the 2-year are falling, much different from Australia, as I showed earlier. Also worth noting that the FTSE is doing reasonably well at the moment, so the markets have not been disturbed by Labour getting in. Now let's go across to the US, and we've had mixed economic signals there, of course, where the most recent payroll growth actually showed some revisions, but quite strong. The unemployment rate was 4.1%, and it's interesting that Jerome Powell, who gave testimony on the Hill, said that we need to see more good data, and 4.1% is still a low rate in unemployment. And it's all worth noting he made the point they're balancing tackling inflation and also keeping an eye on the unemployment rate. So if unemployment rate rises, then chances are rates will get cut. And he did sort of signal that the next move was most likely down, but didn't take lifting rates completely away. Now, it's also worth noting that the debt issuance in the US continues at a pace. So the debt bomb still ticks away there. At the moment, the markets are still willing to buy government securities. How long will that continue and what price will they need to pay? Well, we do see that the S&P 500 is still pretty strong because, of course, that is being driven mainly by the tech sector. And if you look at the equal weight, it's a different story. It's pretty much where it was back in 2022. But Nvidia is still quite strong, although it's come back a little bit from its peak. One analyst did suggest that maybe the valuation was overextended at the moment. And the 2-year rates are down significantly, 4.633, indicating possibility of lower rates, which reflects the view that maybe rates will be coming down in the US. Over in China, well, there are lots of questions there. The economy is still quite weak. And for example, we got the China-built EVs going to be hit with duties in the EU. And we also had Taiwan demands China returns fishing boat seized by Coast Guard. There is still a lot of tensions there. Economically speaking, China is looking pretty weak. And that's reflected in the most recent indices. This is the Shanghai Shenzhen, where the trend has been significantly down over the last few months. Finally, on Bitcoin, well, there's still a bit of issue there with regard to the Mt. Gox situation. Rates have been up and down a bit. We look as though we're maybe coming now back to the upper 50s. But of course, there is a question about what happens with the price of Bitcoin ahead, bearing in mind that it's way off where it was at its peak. Some people are arguing that with the rates in the US now coming down and the market's still quite strong, maybe the attractiveness of Bitcoin is a little less. We will see. And talking about attractiveness, gold futures have gone sideways since the middle of April. Futures tend to actually reflect possibly high inflation. If inflation is coming down, maybe gold is a little less attractive. It's also worth noting that the crude oil statistics show that prices are still quite strong, thanks partly to high demand from the US, low demand from China, and the Middle Eastern situation. So there are some questions about whether the oil prices will remain elevated, and because of that, whether in fact oil will flow into higher inflation. We've already seen high shipping costs, and we've seen these oil prices begin to percolate through to higher costs as well. So that then feeds potentially back into inflation, and that begs the question as to whether in fact inflation has been beat or not. So in summary, we are seeing significant uncertainty. I think over the next few weeks, with the northern summer and holidays, markets will probably go a bit sideways. The autumn is a test quite often. September and October tends to see markets relatively weak. And we will get a better read on whether, in fact, central banks will be able to take rates lower, particularly in the US and in the UK, or whether, in fact, like in Australia, we have to see higher rates for longer. Things are quite tricky at the moment, a lot of uncertainty. But I will make this point. The politics now are getting in the way of economics. Or put it another way, economics is actually very much driven by politics. We can see that in the UK, we can see that in the US and elsewhere too. It's all a bit of a mess, really. And I come back to this last thought. Policymakers have created this problem. They took rates too low, they did quantitative easing. Governments pumped massive amounts of liquidity into the system. That liquidity pump is still running. And therefore, expecting inflation to dissipate without significant pain is, I think, an open question. And as I discussed today in my recent post on New Zealand, New Zealand tells us something about what may be happening ahead, because there now rates are likely to be cut. But in the meantime, New Zealand is recessionary and it's looking problematic. Unfortunately, whilst policymakers pull the levers, it's real people that get hit over the head with a 4x2. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.